For you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C therapies, is the answer to your concern. Don't wait until it's too late. For more information and to order, call Dennis Daniels at 1-800-205-6245. Heart Technology, it's natural, it's effective, it's inexpensive, and it's guaranteed. 1-800-205-6245.
The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups or government programs. The American Freedom Network is not sponsored by advertisers demanding content or programming control. The American Freedom Network is solely funded by you, the listener. Please help keep the American Freedom Network on the air by purchasing one of our sponsor's fine products or by calling 1-800-205-6245 to make a donation. The American Freedom Network needs your help.
Some churches believe that Christians will be raptured before the coming of the Great Tribulation. Have you heard this teaching? Have you wondered if it was true? The Watchman's Cry is an interesting book by Obadiah Frank that uses the Bible and clearly explains that this teaching is not true. You can get the Watchman's Cry from the American Freedom Network by calling 1-800-205-6245. This amazing book is only $10 postpaid. Get it now by calling 1-800-205-6245, the American Freedom Network.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots, biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath.
Dr. Stan here at the American Freedom Network, and hopefully our guest this morning is going to be Joseph Smith with his book, Under God. Mr. Smith, are you there?
I am.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate so much your being with us. Fairly early there, but this program will be aired in Denver, where you live, actually. Mr. Smith is graduated from Yale College, and he went to law school at the University of Chicago. He was assistant to Deputy Attorney General there in Colorado, and now he's a practicing lawyer in Denver. Is that a pretty good analysis?
That is a good summary, yes.
All right, fine. And of course, he's written a fascinating book called Under God. He and Tara Ross, who's also an attorney, have written a book about George Washington, because the subtitle is George Washington and the Question of Church and State. And this is an important question, I think, today. Is there a wall of separation between church and state? Is that what our founding fathers really believed, that they really wanted? And what we see today is really not simply a wall of separation but between church and state, but a frank hostility towards Christianity, towards religion, on the part of our federal government. Well, that is, unless, of course, it's the Muslim religion or Quasicoto, the Mexican, a god. That's perfectly all right, but certainly animosity towards the God of the Bible. Do you have that feeling as the practicing attorney that there's a certain amount of prejudice there?
Well, I guess I have that feeling as a practicing attorney. I also have that feeling as just a citizen. I think it's hard for any of us to, read the newspaper, much less send our kids to school or, go through the Christmas season without all of these controversies over religion and government coming in touch with one another, and the very aggressive position taken by those who favor this, so-called wall of separation between church and state. They want all religion out of anything the government touches, and of course, more and more, government touches everything.
Sure. But it is this hostility towards religion on the part of the government that is of concern to many of us. Well, anyway, I'd like you to go back and explain to our listeners why you wrote the book, why George Washington is important, and why, of course, your book is important, because I think it's a very important book.
Well, thank you. Most people are probably familiar with the phrase separation of church and state. I think a lot of people believe it's in the Constitution, and of course it's not. My co-author and I wrote this book to take one step in the direction of correcting the historical record, and doing that by going back to the examples set by and the words spoken by our very first president, George Washington. Washington was not only the president of the Constitutional Convention when the Constitution was drafted, he was serving as the first president of the United States when the First Amendment was ratified, and it's the First Amendment of the Constitution that contains the religion clauses, and those are the clauses that say government cannot establish a religion, and it must protect the free exercise of religion. And it's from those clauses that over time, and we can get into more detail, but from those clauses over time, some people have drawn the, the interpretation that there's a separation between church and state mandated by the Constitution, and that is not the way George Washington saw it, or for that matter, the second president, John Adams, saw it. It turns out to be the way Thomas Jefferson phrased it. He was the third president, but I think even he had no idea of the Pandora's box he was opening by saying that, because I think even Jefferson would be shocked to see where we are today in terms of, as you put it, government hostility towards religion.
Well, certainly, you've written a book, George Washington, certainly first in war, first in peace, first in the hearts of his countrymen, was a slogan that was used many years ago, and justifiably so, because he was a towering figure, not only physically, but certainly psychologically, morally, in the foundation of our nation. So why don't you go a little bit into the background of his religious beliefs, and, of course, how he applied religion and utilized religion, not only through his period of military command, but then as the first president of the United States.
Sure. Washington really should be studied by all Americans, whether it's in grade school or beyond, as the singularly most important American who ever lived. And we've somewhat lost the tradition of really learning about George Washington. People think of him and they think, well, he was the first president, he chopped down a cherry tree, and it's probably not even true about the cherry tree, but nonetheless, a little primer on Washington for those who have lost track of some of the details. As you mentioned, he was not only the first president, but starting four decades before that, he served in the colonial military under British rule. He was then a legislator in the colony of Virginia when it was still under British rule. He then became the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army, that is the American army that fought against the British in the Revolutionary War. He was then drafted to preside over the Constitutional Convention when the United States came into being, and at that time everyone knew he had become the most admired man of his age and certainly the most admired American of his age. Everyone knew as he sat there presiding over the Constitutional Convention that he would be, if the Constitution was ratified, he would be the first president of the United States, and of course that is how it unfolded, and he served two terms and then voluntarily decided he did not want to run for a third term. He wanted there to be a peaceful, transition of power to another man to be president. All along, during those roughly four decades of public service, Washington encountered questions of how religion and government should deal with one another. And going back to the days when he was, a relatively mid-level officer in the colonial military, he developed then a very strong belief that his soldiers should attend divine services, as he put it, and he ordered them to do so. He wanted there to be, and in fact quarreled some with the British colonial governor at the time, to get government-paid military chaplains. And he went so far, in fact, at one point his officers, he lacked funds for these, government funds for these chaplains, and his officers came forward and said, we're having trouble getting money for a variety of things, as was common in the military, probably common still today. Why don't we take the money out of our private pockets to pay the military chaplains? And Washington said, no, this is part of government's job to pay these chaplains. He was very firm in that. And what evolved over time, going all the way back to those early military days, but through the rest of his public service, all the way through the time he was president, was a belief that a self-governing people, as the Americans were becoming, needed religion and morality.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at the American Freedom Network.
Constitutional Moments are brought to you throughout the day through the generosity of CNC Prototype Machine, Boulder, Colorado.
Columbine Hearing Center understands your hearing, speaking, and listening problems. Call highly qualified, nationally certified audiologist Michelle Gross for your hearing test, hearing aid, and listening rehabilitation needs. With 25 years of experience, you will get accurate diagnosis and treatment, undivided attention, and service. Call 303-857-6688 for a personal hands-on evaluation. Columbine Hearing Center, 303-857-6688. Financing, Medicaid, and Medicare available.
We have many treasures here in wonderful, colorful Colorado. One of the lesser known is on the corner of Mulberry and Remington, right here in Fort Collins. Can you guess it? That's right, the Corner Coins and Jewelry Incorporated. It's family owned by John and Carol Anderson. They specialize in gold and silver coins, rare coins, and gold and silver bullion. Call today at 970-482-7759 or visit the corner at Remington, Mulberry, and Fort Collins. Again, that number is 970-482-7759.
17 years.
12 and a half years. I'm saving $66,000 in interest.
These people didn't refinance. They didn't get a raise. In fact, most didn't change their budget or lifestyle at all. Instead, they made a simple switch in how they bank, which revolutionized their ability to pay off debt. Stop paying bills month after month and never getting ahead. For more information, call 1-800-760-8091. Call 1-800-760-8091 today.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the American Freedom Network. Our guest this morning is Joseph Smith, his book, Under God. And of course, it's a fascinating book about George Washington because it really gives you his view of religion. Was he an evangelical Christian? Well, when he was very young, although it doesn't mention the book, he did write many poems about essays about Christianity. As he grew up, he did not speak as much about Christianity, but he often spoke of God and the importance of God in life. And would you like to tell the story that he wrote to, I think it was his brother, after he was involved with the Indian ambush, French and Indian ambush, when he was still working as a soldier, when he was serving as a soldier in the British Army?
Well, sure. It was back during the French and Indian War, and it's one of the earliest and most poignant stories, I guess, although certainly entirely factual, of Washington's strong belief that God was playing an active role, not only in his life personally, but in what was becoming, I suppose, the American, was a precursor at that point to the American Republic. There was a great battle when Washington was serving as an aide-de-camp in the French and Indian War for the British Army. And the British troops, of which Washington was one at the time, keep remembering that, he wasn't fighting yet against the British, he was one of them, they were decimated. And Washington himself had at least one, I think it maybe was more than one, horse shot out from under him, and he had bullet holes through his coat. And he wrote to his brother, and in fact I'll quote, because it's a beautiful letter. He says, quote, "I am still in the land of the living, by the miraculous care of Providence that protected me beyond all human expectation. I had four bullets through my coat, and here it is, and two horses shot out under me, yet escaped unhurt." And that was not the only time that Washington believed that God, as I say, was playing an active role in his life, but then later an active role in protecting the American troops against the British during the Revolutionary War, and played an active role in America coming into being and the American Republic coming into being, and that certainly had to be part of why he believed government should accommodate and even encourage religion, because he thought God was playing an active role in the foundation of America.
Well, didn't he encourage, in fact, and many times insist that the soldiers under his command go to religious services?
He did indeed. He felt it was extremely important, and as you say, he made it mandatory that his soldiers go to religious services. He tried very hard to increase the number of military chaplains so that each soldier would be able to worship with a chaplain of his own religion. You know, so there was an important aspect there of accommodating people's religious preferences or, you know, the different sects and so forth. But he did mandate attendance at divine services.
Well, I think it's important people understand that at that time, in those days, there were a number of different sects of Christianity, which were all very distinct. I mean, certainly the Congregationalists, coming from a Puritan background, were entirely different than the Baptists, and then the Quakers, and then the Presbyterians. And there was a certain, a very definite barrier between the various religious sects. But they all acknowledged one thing, and that, of course, was the divinity of Jesus Christ. Of course, there were Catholics who also acknowledged that, but there were a few Jews at the time, not very many, but certainly everybody had this right to worship. And certainly even in his farewell address, he stressed the importance of religion, didn't he?
He did indeed, and that was, you know, Washington, by that point, although certainly even earlier, knew that he was setting an example for all of his successors, and indeed for the entire, you know, launching of the American project. He knew that his every word, his every speech would be looked back upon as the example for future presidents and the government of the United States as he rolled forward. And if you don't mind, I'll quote again, because again, it's a beautiful passage from his farewell address that he, you know, knew literally every American would be reading when it was published across the nation. He said, quote, "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and cherish them. A volume could not trace all their connections with private and public felicity." And that's where the quote ends. And that's, you know, the way he concludes there is so important to the project we undertook with this book, where he says that religion and morality are important to both private and public felicity. He not only saw religion as an important part of, you know, his own life, but he saw it as an important part of the life of the Republic. And as I think you kind of hinted at least a little bit earlier, Washington was interestingly more religious in his public speeches than he was in his private correspondence. He seemed to think there was a special duty for a public official to be religious and to acknowledge religion and to really bring God into the public square, which obviously is very different from the way many people think today.
And, of course, at one time, Washington's farewell address was taught in schools. Young men were required, and women were required to memorize Washington's farewell address, but no longer today. Of course, mention of God in schools is outlawed because, of course, our whole attitude towards God, who actually, I believe, played an important part in creation of America, that attitude has changed from one of encouragement to one of frank hostility. How did we get to the mess we're in today?
I'll come right back to that. If I make a brief plug for my book, I just want to mention, as you mentioned, that you know, people used to really study these speeches. One thing we've done in this book is to reprint Washington's many of Washington's speeches and letters in full so that people can read them and not simply read an argument about them, but we you know, give them the whole speech. And I encourage everyone to read, you know, the first inaugural address, the second inaugural address, the farewell address, as well as some of the more minor works. They're fascinating to read. Back to your question of how we got where we are. The history is really fascinating because, you know, the phrase separation of church and state, and that's what the courts anchor all of these judicial decisions to, and that's really what drives this idea of separation of church and state, are these court cases. That phrase hadn't even been coined by the time George Washington was done being president and actually had died. It's literally a phrase that George Washington never heard. What happened was, by the time the third president, Thomas Jefferson, came around, Jefferson had a different relationship with the clergy of the time. Jefferson had much more peculiar personal religious views than Washington or Adams, the second president. And Jefferson didn't like the idea of declaring days of public prayer, exercises like that that Washington had done as president, that Adams had done as president. So Jefferson put an end to that practice in particular, and he also took the occasion to write a letter to a group of Baptists in Connecticut saying that his, Jefferson's, interpretation of the First Amendment was the creation of this wall of separation between church and state. And he wrote, Jefferson wrote at the time to his own attorney general that he wanted that to become, in essence, the new interpretation of the First Amendment. And it didn't happen for a long time. But much later, 1879 is actually the year, the U.S. Supreme Court dug that letter out and said, this is what Jefferson said about the First Amendment. They were considering a case where a Mormon man had been prosecuted for bigamy, and the Mormon man's defense was, my religion allows or maybe even requires bigamy, and therefore I can't be prosecuted. He lost that case before the U.S. Supreme Court, but it was in that context that the court found this letter from Jefferson and said, this is part, at least, of what the First Amendment means. It then lay dormant for another, 60 or so years until 1947. And that's really when the U.S. Supreme Court picked up again on that one letter from Jefferson and said, this is the meaning of the religion clauses in the First Amendment, that there is a wall of separation because Jefferson said so. And why the court decided to put all that emphasis on Jefferson, and ever since has been anchoring all of its jurisprudence in this area to Jefferson's phrase from that one letter in 1802, is a bit of a mystery.
But of course, Jefferson was writing about the federal government, certainly not the fact that the state governments couldn't do what they wanted to at the time, because at that time most of our states had their own authorized state religion. So certainly the wall, this dealt with Congress who make no law, not that the state, not that the teacher in a public school couldn't have a prayer, or the students could have a prayer, or as recently has been determined why certainly if you're the valedictorian of a class that's graduating from a public school, you're not allowed to mention God. That would have been the furthest thing from the minds of our founding fathers, don't you think?
Well, that's true. You know, you run into an entirely different, or at least additional, doctrine of law when you talk about whether the whole Bill of Rights, which of course was written to apply to the federal government, that's what the whole debate was about at the time. It has come to be through court cases and of course the amendment of the Constitution further after the Civil War. The prevailing view is that now the Bill of Rights is laid out against the federal government by the founders, now applies against the states and their subsidiary, you know, entities like cities and counties, that, you know, not to give everyone their armchair law degree here, but that's by operation of the post-Civil War, you know, mid-19th century amendments to the Constitution.
But they were never applied, you know, after the Civil War. They weren't applied, really, until the radicals took over our Supreme Court in that period under Roosevelt and Truman, and, of course, set out to change the structure of our society and create this hostility for religion. Because from the time of the Civil War up until, you know, really the 1960, why you could have prayer in school. I mean, this was perfectly legal. When I went to school, we had prayer in school. We had an entirely different world. You took God out of our schools and God out of our society, and that was a decision that really was never enforced until 1962 or 63.
Right. You're right about that. And the key thing to realize is just that there are two kind of legs on the stool, or it's probably a better metaphor than that. One is the question of whether the Bill of Rights, including the First Amendment, should apply at all to states or cities or counties. And the reason that it is applied, and there are people who argue that it shouldn't be, but the reason it is in Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment is one of the post-American Civil War amendments that was passed, or, well, at least the 14th was passed in 1868, I believe it was. And the relevant sentence or clause in Section 1 of the 14th Amendment says, no state, so it is addressing the states, shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. And that's what has been used to say the rights of the citizen of the United States, as enshrined in the Bill of Rights, are now rights of the citizens of every state against his own state government.
But is that what the people who wrote that really meant?
Well, that's subject to some historical debate, to be sure, but I think, even more importantly, is even if you grant the premise that the Bill of Rights, you know, all of them, not just the religion clauses, but the entire Bill of Rights, should be applied against the state, they're still enshrined in the First Amendment, the religion clauses, is not a strict separation of church and state. That is a historical myth. It was Jefferson's desire from a political and policy standpoint to have more distance between religion and state, but he knew he was out of step with many of the other founders, including his predecessors as president. So if you take the proper understanding of the First Amendment and apply it against the states, you're left without banning prayer at public schools or, you know, not having commencement addresses that reference God and so forth. The extremism, in my view, comes from a misinterpretation of the religion clauses in the First Amendment. I'm less troubled by the application of the Bill of Rights against the states by operation of the 14th Amendment.
All right. Well, then let's get back to, because your book really deals primarily with letters and with talks and speeches given by Washington to point out the fact that Washington believed that God was absolutely essential, and discussion of God and religious practice were absolutely essential if we were going to have a free society. And we'll be back in just a moment with Joseph Smith here at the American Freedom Network.
Discover MagnetiCare cell-activating liquid complex and RX magnets for a healthier life. Tom Martino and the Broncos know what works when you need to reduce swelling and inflammation, eliminate chronic pain, increase blood circulation, and aid in the healing process. Get your fast-acting MagnetiCare liquid complex, cream, or RX magnets now. Call Bob at 303-388-1227. That's 303-388-1227. www.magneticare.net.
I'm Ann Johnson. For over 11 years, I've owned a health food store. I'm an iridologist, herbalist, and perform extensive muscle testing to find out what products best meet my customers' health needs. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about Vital PSP. It consistently surpasses over 3,000 samples in my test kit. My customers are having amazing fast results. Vital PSP has profound effects at DNA levels. If you struggle with any health issues, I recommend you call me, 303-833-2784.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
We're talking today with Tom Phillips, founder of The Green Herb. Tom, what makes The Green Herb different?
First is our health analysis. I know of no other company that will take the time necessary to suggest an in-depth herbal program especially for you. And we do it at no charge or obligation. Also, we manufacture all of our products right in the Wheat Ridge facilities. This way we can assure you that you're getting the highest quality products available. Last is our guarantee. If you don't think our products are the finest, most potent herbal products available, just return the bottle and we'll exchange it or refund your purchase price. We can do the analysis at The Green Herb, over the phone, or online at www.thegreenherb.com. Call today and set an appointment for your free health profile at 888-765-HERB. That's 888-765-4372. Or come by our store on the north side of I-70 Frontage Road, 1 mile west of Kipling.
How many of you battle the symptoms of failing health with toxic medications and inconvenient supplements? Do you feel like you've been fighting battles but losing the war? How about winning the war for a change? Introduce BioSuperfood in your diet and increase the metabolic activity of each cell in your body for greater repair, detoxification, and regeneration. Gain immediate energy, boost your immune system, and restore your health with extraordinary whole and organic nutrients in BioSuperfood. Win the war against disease. Call now, 877-288-9116.
Dr. Stan back here at the American Freedom Network. Our guest this morning is Joseph Smith, who is a practicing attorney right in Denver. His book, Under God, George Washington, the Question of Church and State. And before we go on, I do have a web page we'd like to get out. Would you like to tell people how they can get copies of your book?
Sure. The easiest way to get the book is online, either at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. If you put in George Washington, Church and State, it's the first book that will pop up. For people who are familiar with those websites, there's also my publisher, Spence Publishing, is actually the place at which to get the best price on the book. So that may interest many listeners. And their website is www.spence, S-P-E-N-C-E, publishing.com. Or for those who prefer to make an order by phone, you can dial 1-888-SPENPUB, SpenPub, and order the book by phone.
All right. Well, of course, certainly there's no question, at least from George Washington's public statements, that he believed in God. Do you believe that, that because he was a member of the Anglican Church, which was the official church of Virginia, do you think that he was an evangelical Christian, or what we'd call an evangelical Christian today?
You know,
do we know really how he felt about Christianity?
We know some is the best answer to that question, and there have been books written that are specifically about Washington's personal religious beliefs, and it's been a matter of some historical debate. One of his biographers noted that he was generally a very private man about private matters, and that on religion in particular, he was even more private than usual. So the historical record is not completely revealing, and that's complicated, I suspect at least, by the fact that George and Martha Washington destroyed the vast majority of their private correspondence with each other, which might have been the best glimpse into the most private aspects of Washington's life, including religion. What we do know about Washington was that he was, so far as anyone can tell, a lifelong member of the Anglican Church. He was certainly baptized into the Anglican Church. He was certainly married in the Anglican Church. He served as a vestryman in two parishes of the Anglican Church in Virginia. He was a godfather to children by way of the Anglican Church. There has been some suggestion that when the Revolutionary War broke out, because King George was not only the head of state of our sworn enemy, Great Britain, but was also the head of the Anglican Church, that Washington stopped going to Anglican services and may have retreated to some extent from the Anglican religion, at least the formal Anglican religion, or the formal Anglican Church is probably the way I should put it. And that's plausible to me. That's not really my area of expertise, but it seems plausible to me. Of course, Washington, heading a continental army in a Revolutionary War, was also a very busy man, and he was away from home all the time. Washington was a Freemason, and Freemasons were required, I guess are required is the way to put it, to affirm a belief in a divine entity. I don't think there's really any doubt that Washington believed in God, but also to affirm a belief in an afterlife. So we know that those were among specific tenets that he believed in. But beyond that, there is, you know, there has been some historic debate about where his personal religious views were. And again, I find it most interesting that, you know, if he was a less religious man, as some have suggested, that makes it all the more amazing that he was so religious in his public statements, in his public speeches. He clearly felt that there was a very important public role for religion in American society. And it was not, it seems clear to me, not just a personal religiosity that was spilling over but he believed just distinctly that there needed to be religion in the public square, and that's what he was, you know, setting an example for throughout his public career, but especially as president.
Well, Ian, one point you mentioned when he was a member of the House of Delegates or Burgess, whatever it was in Virginia, that they called for a day of fasting and prayer, and he voted not only for the day of fasting and prayer, but in his diary he mentioned went to church and fasted all day.
I mean, that's true.
It's one thing, you know, to go to church, you know, everybody can see it. Another thing to fast all day because you believe that this is a means of drawing closer to God.
Well, and that was, you know, he was in the House of Burgesses as the legislative body was called there in Virginia at the time, Colonial Virginia, and that was before, or I should just say during the time when Virginia, as a colony, had its established church. And he served on the legislature's Committee for Religion, which was in charge of regulating vestries and parishes and promoting public virtue and protecting religious minorities. So he very much came from that environment where, at the what we would now call the state level, there was a very active involvement of government with religion. And he showed, you know, the historical record shows that he had no discomfort with that. The Burgesses paid their legislative chaplains with public money. They, as you say, it was after the Boston Tea Party, actually, that they declared a day of fasting and prayer. And Washington did note in his diary that he participated. So that's, you know, it was very much part of his, you know, experience and history coming later into the presidency.
Well, of course, Washington becomes very much alive in your book and certainly one of the towering figures in the formation of America, who stressed, you know, during his public speeches how important God was to the stability of a society and how different we are today with a frank hostility on the part of the government towards Christianity. And yet, of course, this is not what the people want. The people are totally against this effort to suppress Christianity in America and in the public school and the public venue and the nativity scene and or even the posting of the Ten Commandments. But the people who really control America have an intense, in my opinion, have an intense hatred of Christianity. Well, our telephone number is 970-689-8255. If you're out there in the listening audience, that's 970-689-8255. If you have a question for Joseph, because it's a, I think it's an important book. I think we need to get back to understanding George Washington, the father of our country, which is what everybody acknowledged. He was the dominant figure both before and during the Revolutionary War and then as the first president. And his views towards God and the importance of God in our society I think should be known to everybody today because there's so much of an effort to make everyone believe, of course, that the founding fathers wanted a secular society. That's not at all what they wanted, is it?
No, it you know, it's something that becomes very clear as you, as anyone studies the historical record, that even for those, and this is, you know, kind of wish the historical debate could be more honest. You know, we realize there are people who believe strongly as a matter of public policy that government and religion should be separate, and people are entitled to that view. Whether the Constitution answers that question the way they want, or whether the Constitution requires that their view prevail, is a totally different question. And that's where, you know, one of the kind of holes in history we're trying to fill with this book is to say the Constitution does not mandate a strict separation between church and state. It doesn't mean you can't argue for that, but you're arguing to the legislature, not looking to the Constitution.
And we'll be back in just a moment here with Joseph Smith to wrap up this morning's program.
Tapes of the preceding show are available by calling 1-800-205-6245, the American Freedom Network. The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots biblically based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath. If you enjoy alternative stations on the radio, shouldn't your TV service provide the same choices? You can get more channels than you have now, plus many more Christian and family programs in crystal clear 100% digital picture and sound, and the price is significantly lower than cable. Just call American Satellite at 970-443-7375. Already enjoying satellite TV but want a lower price? We can help you too. Packages start at only $19.99 a month. Call 970-443-7375. DVRs and high definition also available. More than 31 million Americans have some type of hearing problem. Only 1 in 5 will seek help. Do you frequently misunderstand conversations? Do you often ask people to repeat what they're saying? Do your ears ring? If you're the one who's always turning up the volume on the TV or the radio, maybe it's time to get a hearing evaluation by a professional, certified, caring audiologist. Call Michelle at the Columbine Hearing Center, 303-857-6688. That's the Columbine Hearing Center, 303-857-6688.
17 years.
12 and a half years. I'm saving $66,000 in interest.
These people didn't refinance. They didn't get a raise. In fact, most didn't change their budget or lifestyle at all. Instead, they made a simple switch in how they bank, which revolutionized their ability to pay off debt. Stop paying bills month after month and never getting ahead. For more information, call 1-800-760-8091. Call 1-800-760-8091 today.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network. I guess this morning, Joseph Smith, his book, Under God, George Washington and the Question of Church and State. And after reading the book, of course, you would be firmly convinced that the founding fathers, certainly the primary founding father, George Washington, believed, of course, the importance of religion in our society. And the idea that, you know, we would condemn a college football coach for bowing his head when the college team was going to have a spontaneous prayer. And, of course, because he's employed by a public college, he can't do that. He's violated the wall of separation between church and state. We have gone to an absurd length, and I think the point that Joseph made is so true. There are people who really hate Christianity, who hate God, and they want to change the structure of our society, and they have the right in a free society to believe that way. Unfortunately, what has happened is a small number of people within the judicial system have transformed America. Rather than amending our Constitution, that's a perfectly legitimate thing to do. You want to change our society, there's a way to do it. But they haven't gone through the amendment process. They haven't, you know, had an open, free debate. They have done this simply by placing people into our court system with this same antagonism, hostility towards religion. And the decisions of the Supreme Court, based not upon history, based not upon really anything having to do with the Constitution, but upon their own bias and hatred of Christianity, has led us to the situation we are today. And I believe, in my opinion, and I'd like to know what Joseph thinks, but I believe that back in 62 and 63, when they began to take God in prayer, and within a decade, the Ten Commandments out of our school, they knew how it would end up. They knew it would, we would come to a state of crisis as we are today, with certainly moral anarchy ruling. Just, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think the members of the Supreme Court, when they took God in prayer out of our school, realize the implications?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I maybe some of them did and maybe others didn't. I think there's also a lot of naivete among, you know, some of the members of the court who maybe hopefully believed you could take religion out of society without taking virtue and morality out of society, and not foreseeing that, as Washington did, that a self-governing people that lacks virtue and morality is not going to last very long. You know, there are members of the court currently on the court, you know, or including those currently on the court, who don't agree with the prevailing law, and so I think there is some hope for some change in the law, and that's, you know, part of why we've written this book, to with the hope that judges and lawyers who practice in this area will begin to acknowledge the broader, you know, and truer history of the First Amendment, and refrain from this nearly exclusive emphasis on Thomas Jefferson's one catchy phrase about separation of church and state, which doesn't appear in the Constitution. In fact, was written more than 10 years after the First Amendment was ratified, and as I mentioned earlier, after the first president, George Washington, was not only out of office but dead and had never even heard this phrase. So it's a very peculiar way to interpret the Constitution, and not one that we do with any other part of the Constitution. So it seems like this is something that should be corrected, but the courts are not quick to correct such things. It will undoubtedly take some time.
Well, I think it is an important issue that it really is the basis of so many of the problems we face today, is this open hostility towards Christianity and certainly towards Judaism as well, you know, on the part of our courts. And until people understand that, I mean, there are ways to change America, but most Americans don't want the changes that we're seeing today. And certainly the America I was born and raised in is not the America we live in today, and it is primarily related to taking God and morality and the moral concepts out of our society. So, you know, once you have the mind of the child, and certainly in our high schools today, where they, of course, indoctrinate them in evolution, they will not allow even any suggestion that God created the heaven and the earth, and that there is this magnificent plan. You see it everywhere in nature, in physics, in chemistry, in astronomy, in music, in mathematics. Everything in a perfect order. There had to be something more than just happenstance for that to occur. And yet, of course, we cannot discuss that in school because it suggests there might be a God, and that, of course, is not to be allowed because we have a wall of separation between church and state. What can we do today, Joseph, to try to get back to some form of sanity in our nation while we still have a nation?
Well, I think on a day-to-day level, when people confront these issues, think about these issues, write, you know, letters to the editor about the issues, or deal with it at their local school board, whatever it might be, one important thing to remind ourselves of, and Washington stands as a great example, is we don't have to choose between a world in which there is absolutely no reference to God or religion in anything government touches, and a world in which we have an oppressive theocracy where there's a government religion. That's the way the situation is often presented to us, a very, you know, false dichotomy by those who favor separation of church and state. They say, well, the only alternative is an oppressive state religion, and that's clearly not the case. And George Washington was among the founders. There was a universal belief that there should not be a Church of the United States, and Washington took great care to protect religious minorities and to accommodate the diversity of religion that existed even back in the day. And he was, you know, Washington was not naive. There were already atheists in the United States, and they had, you know, civil rights like anyone else. Washington referred to not only Jews, but also Muslims were in the United States back then. He was not dealing with a totally different world than we live in now. So you can have religion in the public square without having, you know, an oppressive single religion state, in essence. And we have to just keep that in the front of our minds as we confront these issues and not be sucked into the false dichotomy presented by those who want religion entirely out of the public square. So that's the first thing I would mention. Beyond that, frankly, a lot of the power on this issue is in the hands of judges, and that means that the lawyers who practice in this area need to go to court with better argument, and the judges need to make better decisions.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate you being with us. God bless.
Thank you.
Justice Ben Joseph Smith will be back to wrap up this morning's program here at the American Freedom Network.
Radio is your best choice for advertising. Radio gets results.
Call 1-800-205-6245 and find out just how inexpensive and effective radio can be. That's 1-800-205-6245. KHNC 1360, The Lion. That's 1-800-205-6245. The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups or government programs. The American Freedom Network is not sponsored by advertisers demanding content or programming control. The American Freedom Network is solely funded by you, the listener. Please help keep the American Freedom Network on the air by purchasing one of our sponsors' fine products or by calling 1-800-205-6245 to make a donation. The American Freedom Network needs your help.
Bill of Rights, Article 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of a religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Article 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots, biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat and Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom. Good Sabbath.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network. This is Dr. Stan back here at the American Freedom Network. And certainly to understand why America has changed, why America has developed a hostility towards God, and why government, in every respect, as far as our public schools, as far as our courts, is anti-Christian. Why did this come about? Well, very simply, there's a wonderful DVD. There's two of them where Carrie put up by our friend Chris Pinto. The first one is called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The second is Riddles in Stone. They're part of a trilogy. The third one has not yet come out. But basically, it points out that when America was founded, there were already occult organizations here, secret societies, specifically the Rosicrucians, who had been sent to America to take control of this nation and destroy any religious foundation here, because, of course, these people were Gnostics. They worshipped a different god. Well, but there were Christians, a strong Christian foundation, and certainly all of our founding fathers believed in God, and although certainly Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson were into the mystery religions and working within them, Jefferson eventually turned against them and turned back towards Christianity. And, of course, if you read Jefferson's writings, and we have them in the Master Thoughts of Thomas Jefferson, he talked about his dedication to Christianity, whether he believed in the divinity of Christ. I do not know, but he said he turned away from the mystery religions, and he wanted to simply lay his head on the pillow, the soft pillow, which Christ had provided for us. And he stopped. I mean, his antagonism towards traditional Christianity at that point. Well, but you see, people's minds, attitudes changed. And what they were as young men was not what they were when they were mature or as they grew older. But it's so important that you understand that all of the people who founded our country, the vast majority of them were evangelical Christians, and they wanted, of course, Christianity in our country, and they recognized that Christianity was an offshoot of Judaism, because talk about Judeo-Christian beliefs, but this was a Judeo-Christian or Christian country. The Supreme Court has repeatedly held that. Then why did we get to the mess we're in today? Why, very simply, because representatives of modern-day Masonry, which was an offshoot of the Rosicrucians, they control the Supreme Court from 41 to 71, in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. And this is covered in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You You must understand that you're never going to hear this elsewhere. Nobody will tell you. Your ministers won't tell you. But it was because the Masons controlled the Supreme Court from 1941 to 1971 that we have the, and of course, they wanted to destroy the Christian foundation of this nation, because the great architect of the universe, who is the God of Masonry, is not the God of the Bible. And you must understand that there are other gods out there. That's why you need, of course, to get my talk on the forbidden secret, because there is a forbidden secret. It has been passed down for 5,000 years. Those of you who have read the book by Rhonda Burns or seen the DVD she's put out, sold millions and millions of copies because it was...